afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. And I am here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, March 12th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Hello, Dolly. No. Anyway, thank you for joining us, the listeners, and to you, Dave. It was a weird Monday. Mondays have been weird lately. They're kind of quiet. You get, you know, some action, but you have this build up to Friday and to the weekend, and then it's like Monday. Everybody just takes a deep breath, and it's quiet. And I've noticed it for probably the past month and a half or so. So just kind of, just because I wanted to say that as I did that. So, you know, you can say something, Dave, if you want.
It's keeping us on our toes.
I guess. You know, you talk about volatility and markets that are emotional and decisions and happenings. It has been very, I don't know if emotional is the right word for it, but anytime you have volatility, it's kind of like it keeps people a little bit off balance, you know. And I think we've had this for the past, about a year and a half, or maybe even longer than that. So again, we'll take a peek at gold today. I'll just stop rattling on and hit the gold prices today. We had a drop early on in the morning, and gold tried to rebound, and it did a pretty good job. We had a low of $1,315, and we're currently at $1,323, down less than a dollar. So not a bad turnaround for gold today with the amount of pressure. And I'm assuming we did see some pressure on the dollar later on in this afternoon. So silver, same time of market, we're looking at $16.61 for gold, for silver, $16.61 for silver, still pressure of that about 5 cents. Platinum was down $2 today at $968, and palladium was down big, almost 2%, $984, down 18. The USDX today was down 0.22 at 89.90, and crude oil today was down 0.72 at 61.32. Paper markets today, you know, they're all over the page. You have the Dow down 156 points at 25,178. The NASDAQ was up 28 at 75.88. And the S&P basically unchanged, down 4 points, 2,783. 10-year yield, 2.87%. Of course, the euro was stronger with the weaker dollar, 123. And I saw the fear and greed index that popped. We're looking at 44, still in the fear territory, but certainly out of the single digits that we've seen lately. And so I would expect to see that continue. You know, it's like there's no worries for anyone. No worries for anyone. So,
And yet there's worries for everyone.
Yeah.
Out there. I've been keeping a close tab on the gap between the 10-year and 30-year treasuries. Today the gap narrowed by just 3 basis points, but that continues a trend that started roughly 2 months ago, and we'll be following that closely because it's one of the... All right, I saw Fiddler on the Roof on Saturday night, so I've got to say it's one of the traditions that... or traditional signals of, you know, an impending recession. So part of the market reports, Melody's market updates, will include just a very quick look at the difference between the 10-year and the 30-year, because, again, as this yield curve, as it's known as, gets flatter, the signs point more vividly toward an upcoming recession.
All right. Well, you know, we talk about Toys R Us. We talked about it prior to Christmas, and because I always thought it was bizarre, here they make their big announcement a couple months before Christmas, before the holidays, saying that, you know, hey, we're having problems. We're gonna have to file bankruptcy, but can we borrow a couple of $1 billion so we can at least make it through the holidays?
Yeah, how
And I'm
about it?
thinking, how about that? You know, here's someone is saying, hey, we're bankrupt. We're not gonna make it, but we just want to get through the holidays. So
It's for the kids,
it's
Melody,
for the
for the kids.
kids.
Yes.
And so they came out and said that they're going to or possibly may shut all of its U.S. stores just as soon as this upcoming week. And you know, that's not good news for two of the biggest publicly traded toy companies. Investors are clearly preparing for the worst. You have shares of Hasbro. They fell 3.5%, and Mattel has plunged 7% since their announcement. Smaller toy company JAKKS Pacific fell too. Canada's Spin Master, which owns the popular line of Hatchimals toys, which I don't know how popular they are. I haven't heard of them, but
Ah.
I don't buy toys. It's been a long time. The only toys I buy are dog toys. But that was down as well on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So everything isn't awesome for privately held European toy giant Legos either. The plastic bricks maker reported its first sales drop in 13 years earlier this week. So these are clearly tough times for the toy makers. A spokesman for Toys R Us declined to comment on the liquidation chatter. That's really interesting about Legos, considering it's been the first drop in sales for 13 years.
Yeah, they've been on an incredible, impressive run. And certainly the Lego movies, I'm sure, haven't hurt the brand either over the last couple of years. Now we're reading too, Melody. You know, Toys R Us went into, they call it administration in the UK, and that paves the path for the stores there to shut their doors. And the potential closings of Toys R Us in America, that'd be a particularly huge blow to Hasbro and Mattel. According to recent regulatory filings from both of those companies, Toys R Us accounted for almost 10% of those companies' overall sales. I would have even thought it would be bigger. But in any event, Toys R Us is the last mega store in the world, I guess, that's dedicated to toys. I mean, without it, toy makers are going to struggle to promote anything but their most popular items. The death of a top customer is the last thing that Mattel and Hasbro need right now, too. Mattel's overall sales during last Christmas season fell 12% from the year before, and that was led by big drops for Fisher-Price, American Girl, which, by the way, adorns half of a wall in our basement. And Lego competitor Mega Bloks brands. Hasbro reported a decline in sales during the fourth quarter as well. That despite the fact that Nerf and My Little Pony owner now holds nearly all of the lucrative licenses tied to movies from Disney and many of its other studios like Pixar, Marvel, and Lucasfilm. Hasbro said that Star Wars product sales actually fell in the fourth quarter, as did sales of Disney Frozen toys. Ay, ay, ay. Now, the softness in the toy industry is partly due to the rise of video games and also other high-tech toys that kids are increasingly playing instead of action figures, dolls, and board games. Gosh, board games. Do you remember them, Melody?
Yeah, but you know what you learned from those board games? You know, you
Oh,
learned so much that
strategy, my.
the video, yeah, like the video games, I don't think provide.
Yeah, I guess they're good for hand-eye coordination, but my wife and I recently found our backgammon game that we had started playing when we were dating many moons ago, and continued playing into the first few years of our marriage, and then we moved and lost our board. And it was like, oh my gosh, because we had kept score, we had kept a log of who won however many games we had played, certainly dozens, if not more. My wife, of course, was winning, In any event, we found it the other week and played backgammon last weekend for the first time in probably 15 years. Anyway, Amazon is changing the nature of this too. The dominance of Amazon has put pressure on a lot of consumer product companies, as they've made just an incredibly relentless push to lower prices, just pricing a lot of these other companies, presumably like Toys R Us, out of the market. I mean, recent struggles at Walmart and Target are also hurting Hasbro and Mattel. Walmart, it turns out, is the largest customer for Mattel and Hasbro, accounting for about 20% of total sales for each of their toy makers. So, you know, and both toy companies, Hasbro and Mattel, get about 10% of their revenue from Target, too.
Well, I really think the importance of these stories is that it doesn't really match up with all the consumer spending that we've been told that has been done. Because here you have toys, and yeah, we get to see the shifting tide in the retail area with Amazon and so forth, but that really shouldn't, I didn't envision Toys R Us. I mean, they've had a strong presence online, mm-hmm. I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of interesting to see. Toys are still toys, and especially for the smaller children, because they're not into the video games and so forth yet, are they?
Hope not.
But then again, who knows? So it's interesting to me. It's just like another sign of the times, and we see the impact when we talk about the. The magnifier, how it magnifies into other areas, the multiplier effect I'm talking about was mm-hmm. what I'm trying to think of. And the multiplier effect here, you see these other companies, you have, you know, the Mattel and Hasbro, and we're seeing that spread down and seeing it impacting all the toy industries. And so is this a toy industry problem, or is it a disposable income problem, or is it a little bit of both? So even though we're getting additional money back from the tax cuts, even though we're supposed to get additional money back from everything else, it doesn't seem like it's really going into, you know, children's toys, or you wouldn't have the these stores having these problems.
Yeah, I mean, either that or the Amazon factor is much bigger than, you know, what's on the surface. It could be that, you know, I mean, I'm actually looking at Toys R Us website now, and it's a dynamic, you know, user-friendly site. I mean, maybe it's coming down to moms and dads and grandparents doing some comparison shopping and finding that Amazon's just offering the lower price. And, customer loyalty is almost a thing of the past, particularly with consumer products. So maybe that's just more than what meets the eye. Perhaps it deserves a little bit more digging. But anyway, you raise an important point, I believe.
And so there's all kinds of things. Even when we talked about the job reports, there's a lot of things that, you know, they said the construction was the leading. And I'm thinking, well, when we did it, I was thinking February, you know, construction, you know, the two really don't go hand in hand. And it's not like the country had, you know, extremely warm weather. There was parts of the country that had some very cold and bitter unless they're included in the rebuilding of Houston, the rebuilding of, you know, the Florida from the hurricanes, even Puerto Rico would have an impact on the number of construction jobs being hired. And so, again, it's how you look at things and how you, you know, kind of read between the lines and dig a little bit deeper to see where you're going. I don't know if we have enough time for this next part, but if about the Minneapolis
Oh,
Neil
I think
Kashkari.
So.
Yeah. He said that the U.S., that I just mentioned job reports, he says that the U.S. is not at full employment yet.
Yeah, it's true. He's questioning whether the economy is really at full employment, which his Federal Reserve colleagues have been trotting out more and more recently. He made some comments on Friday that came after the Labor Department's monthly employment report that we talked about, showing that the U.S. economy added over 300,000 jobs last month. Now, because we increasingly live in Twitter land, a lot of Twitter followers were confused about Kashkari's comments. So he translated what he said for those Americans. And I'm quoting him here. He said, "We keep saying that we're at max employment, and then all these people choose to work. It suggests we weren't really at max employment." I mean, his tweet says, "We were at maximum employment. We are now at maximer employment," which I thought was kind of clever. And Kashkari is touching on what could be a hot debate in the coming months. U.S. employment's at 4.1%, so it's lowest since 2000. And, Fed officials regularly say that they've essentially fulfilled the maximum employment part of their dual mandate, even as they lag when it comes to lifting inflation to their 2% goal.
He also pointed out that there could be a few reasons to think there might be room to recover more workers. Most obviously, job gains have failed to slow much, and you would expect them to in an economy at full employment. Friday's reports kind of underline that. And what's really interesting, I saw Mnuchin being interviewed this week. I think he was on Meet the Press. And, they didn't talk to him about anything. They just wanted to talk about, his idea and why Trump said this and why Trump said that. But the one thing that he did say that I thought was kind of interesting, he says that they're really trying very hard and think that they'll be able to maintain a 3% GDP. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what happened to the 4 and 5% and 6% GDP that, they were saying that we were going to get? Now they're just hoping to stay, keep it at 3.
Oh, and, shush, shush, my loyal co-host.
I noticed...
We've forgotten about that.
Well, we did. I don't forget.
That's what they've wanted. That's what they want from us. Forget about it. Move on to other things.
Move on to other things. But so I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, we were being promised with the tax cuts, with the tariffs and everything like that, we'd see, very strong, wage growth, but no one sees it. And even a 3% is sort of a high number. But beyond that, participation rate rising in February and has been relative stable for several years. Several years. In just a few minutes, we'll be gone as you're going to be listening to some commercials, and Dave and I will be right back in just after a few short minutes.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. You can still get today's newsletter. It hasn't gone out yet. Probably will go right after this program. Just have to do a few finishing touches on it, so you can still get the current issue. That's dgscoins.com. Sign up at the, just click on the little mailbox, and it'll take you to where you can sign up. And if for any reason that you do not receive the email, because sometimes links are broken and so forth over a period of time, let us know so we can get it fixed for you. And it doesn't happen very often, but once in a while. And I figured if it happens once in a while, well, maybe there's somebody out there who thought, well, I did sign up and I didn't get it. Let us know so we can find out what problem might be. And let's see if there are any other announcements that I need to make. We'll be running probably the little special again, the little package that we run for $550. I brought the price back down, but you know, since I brought the price down, prices are rising again. So, but we'll keep it at $550 for the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle and 20 Silver Eagles. So give Carla a call. She's waiting to take your order. And again, you can buy 1 or 100 of these packages. They're readily available. And let's see, let's talk about the threat to jobs, since we were kind of on that pace, Dave.
Sure. A Gallup poll, Melody, that was released Friday found that 53% of Americans see artificial intelligence, AI, robotics, and automation as a bigger threat to the nation's job than immigration and outsourcing over the next 10 years. The poll, however, did find telling gaps in how concerned various demographics were about new tech, with young and college-educated respondents choosing it more often than older Americans and those with less education. The long and short of it, people like technology, but they don't trust it. 77% said AI would have a positive impact on lives over the next decade, but when asked to predict whether new technologies will take away more jobs than they create during that time span, three-quarters, just a little bit less, 73% agreed that they would. Furthermore, Melody, every demographic studied said they saw new technologies as a greater threat to American jobs than either immigration and outsourcing. Melody?
Well, you know, there is still more of a basic perspective shows a surprising divide in who is most fearful of losing their jobs to new tech. And they were asked various questions. And I'm not sure if we have time to put this in the newsletter or not, if you want to stay on this or we can move on. But it certainly, you know, again, you know, we talk about the tariffs bringing back manufacturing, you know. A couple of tariffs on a couple of products. People expect to, hey, when I see smokestacks, when I see textile manufacturing, that's the biggie coming back into this country, then I can say things worked. I don't think we're going to see that. I don't think we're going to see the smokestacks that was once commonplace in this country for manufacturing jobs. Technology is one of the reasons. And so it's they're not going to provide the wages that we need to have a, you know, a decent living. They're not going to provide the benefits. Even if we close the globalization and bring these manufacturing some manufacturing back to these states, it's not going to erase what has been created in the past, you know, 20, 30 years. I mean, we're globalized. We also need that trade now. We need the rest of the world to buy our products in addition to the citizens. So it's a very complicated, I think, you know, I think it's a very complicated system that's been created, and just to put tariffs on particular products and think that it cures the world, cures the United States, and all of a sudden we're now going to have, you know, bigger incomes, better incomes, and so forth. I really don't, I just don't see it. Not to say it can't have some positive impacts on some areas, but not to what I think people are anticipating. And again, textiles. Dave, how much have we, I mean, do we even do any textiles in this country anymore?
Well, not too much. I mean, and virtually all of the major textile work we that's left are in our southern states, where there are either right-to-work laws where unions, for example, aren't as strong, and thus, you know, the cost of producing them there has been cheaper. But the vast majority, and I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, is now done overseas.
Yeah. So I don't know what the cure is, if there is a cure. I guess we can bring back as much as we can and go from there. But again, to fix all of our problems here in the States, to address the amount of debt that we have, it ain't going to happen. Right, Dave? It's not going to
happen.
Well,
not until our wonderfully loyal, magnanimous top 100 billionaires decide to, you know, split some of their wonderful charitable giving to the U.S. Treasury to begin to help pay down the debt. I say that certainly tongue-in-cheek, but I think the words to remember are what you just said. It ain't going to happen.
It ain't going to happen. Well, yeah. We learned over the weekend that in late February, China's National People's Congress approved a constitutional amendment virtually unanimously to eliminate its presidential term limit, which is now 2 6-year terms. What else do you have to say about that, Dave?
Well, Melody, yeah, the People's Congress tally for the change reportedly was 2,958 for. It is for eliminating the term limit, 2 against, 3 abstentions, and 1 invalid vote.
Wow.
That's 99.8% for stats fans out there. Now, stop and reflect on that for a few seconds. Are you, like me, wondering about the health and whereabouts of the 6 members who didn't vote yes?
Yes.
You know, hopefully, for their sake, this was a secret ballot or, you know, a hand raising that, you know, and they were in the middle of the crowd and sort of got to be anonymous. But, you know, the lopsided vote does open the door for President Xi Jinping to consolidate his growing power and start down the path of becoming president for life. That after his second term ends in 2023. More importantly, and I believe more alarmingly, the Communist Party of China's Central Committee, we'll call the Communist Party of China CPC, voted to broadly expand its takeover of state institutions. Under the guise of deepening reform of party and state institutions, the CPC decided to broaden Xi's goal of breaking down the wall between the party and state. and reinsert the CPC in all, not virtually all or some, all aspects of Chinese life. Publication Xinhua is reporting that the driving principle propelling Xi and the party's desired dominance is this, and I'm quoting here, "The party exercises overall leadership over all areas of endeavor in every part of the country." That's pretty all-encompassing. "A primary task of deepening reform of the party and state institutions is to strengthen the CPC's leadership in every sector." Wow.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I want to go on and I want to talk about and ask about the steel and aluminum tariffs. But I just want to say this was out of the Financial Times. And this was actually shortly before they voted on this and he was elected, you know, what you just talked about. We forget about Taiwan.
Yeah.
And this is a growing threat to Taiwan's efforts to maintain a de facto independence. And in the face of Beijing's insistence that this island is part of its territory, and to the embattled democracy movement in neighboring semi-autonomous Hong Kong, Xi Jinping has largely been the author of fairly hardline policies toward Hong Kong and Taiwan. This was said by a William Stanton. He was a former U.S. diplomat. He says, "The problem with all dictators is that no one can put a brake on anything they want to do." And this was followed up on with a Bloomberg report that China had warned Taiwan on Friday it would only get burnt if it sought to rely on foreigners, adding to warnings from state media the country could go to war over Taiwan if the United States passes into law a bill promoting closer U.S. ties. So, you know, now that he has the power, and we already know how they view Taiwan, their hardline policies towards both the Hong Kong and it's... You know, you talk about that little black swan where something pops up and, you know, we've often viewed other things as little black swans that no one's really looking in that direction. But here's something very quietly. Xi Jinping now has the power. And so they're flexing their muscles. And so it's another very dangerous situation that could be cropping up.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, you asked a minute ago what all this has to do with steel and aluminum, the tariffs announced recently. Well, possibly a lot. I mean, for one thing, China's in a much better position today to respond to tariffs than it was in 2002. When President George W. Bush slapped on stiff steel tariffs. Back then, our biggest potential trade war foes were the European Union and Japan. Today, it's China. In 2002, China produced less than 200 million tons of steel. Now it's capable of turning out more than five times that amount annually. In fact, China's glut of steel is so substantial that it recently decided to cut back production by 200 million tons. And that's to 800 million tons a year. Mark Wu, who's a professor of international trade law at Harvard, added that China's domestic demand for steel is falling as its own economy has slowed down the last year or two, and that excess steel there is disrupting the entire world market. And now with China trying to reassert itself economically and militarily and politically, I mean, as a global superpower, if not the global superpower, I mean, this could be the last time or one of the last times the U.S. is in a position to set the terms of our relationship with China. And the creation of a modern-day Mao in the form of Xi and a CPC that wants to dominate Chinese society, and all of a sudden, you have the makings of a sleeping giant transformed into fully awake, powerful global giant on a mission. On a mission to dominate and control. So let's be clear, China's ability to retaliate economically against the U.S. resembles that of the entire European Union. Its annual trade surplus, Melody, with the U.S. was a little over $375 billion last year. That's a figure that's been steadily rising for over 35 years. China could hit back by imposing tariffs of its own on steel and on a broad array of other products. Remember, last year, Americans bought over $505 billion in goods and services from China, and the Chinese bought over $130 billion from the U.S.
A little lopsided there, eh? And beyond the tariffs, China could also make it a lot harder for U.S. companies to do business there by denying operating permit workers for projects or work visas. I mean, you can even have China move ahead with threats to reduce, or they could even eliminate future purchases of U.S. treasuries as they would cash in its existing U.S. debt, and that totals $1.2 trillion. China has to do something in response to Trump's tariffs just to signal its own resolve. Or do they, Dave? Or are they just, do you think that they will actually do something in response to the tariffs?
Well, I mean, obviously it remains to be seen. It's a good question. I mean, some observers are saying, as you mentioned, he's got to do something to show its resolve to the world. Particularly those that it's trying to do business with, and it's a really big infrastructure project, which we may have time to get to in the third segment. But they could decide to step back and let us fight it out with our allies, essentially, with Canada, Mexico, the European Union. The EU talked last week publicly, about imposing retaliatory tariffs on Kentucky bourbon and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. I mean, they affect, employment and the economies and politicians in states like Kentucky, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and several others, depending on how widespread they may choose to impose duties on. And China's expanding its sphere of influence to every corner of the world. At the same time, the U.S. is in the process of either retreating or pulling out of or attempting to renegotiate international trade pacts like NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So, this is it'll be interesting, whether it's about tariffs or whether it's about American domestic policy or a contest for global leadership. The short answer is I don't know what they're going to do, Melody. But the options that are before them and the rest of the world just don't seem all that palatable. For building stronger relations.
Well, when we talk about the tariffs of 25% on steel and aluminum, and if you go in the top countries that export to the United States, I mean, China's number 11. So they're going to be impacted, but probably not to the degree that they're going to instigate a trade war.
Agreed.
So I don't think that's where we're heading there. We'll finish this conversation when we come back right from this short break. Thank you for joining us.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I was going through some of my inventory this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. And let me see. I came across some fantastic Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold pieces. These you can purchase these for $1,400, but the dates are very nice. I have a 19 and they're beautiful coins, absolutely spot free. 1903, an 1895S, a 1903, an 1894S. And I have another one here. I had them on my desk. They're absolutely gorgeous. And if you wanted some Saint Gaudens, I have five of those two with some really, really nice dates. But you have to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. That other Mint State 61 $20 Liberty was also an S date. I don't have it right in front of me, but it is an S date. So buy five. You know, I'd like to sell them in packages of five, and I got two of those packages with those really nice dates. So you'll have to call me for the dates. I don't know if I have them over here or not. We were just doing inventory, and the Saint Gaudens. We have a 1914S, a 1913, a 1907, Mint State 61, a 1920, and a 1910D. So some great dates. We appreciate if you purchase the five of them at $1,400. And I got two of those little specials for both. And the other one on that was an 1897S. For the Liberty. So I hope I'm not too confusing on bringing you those dates, but some great coins, great dates, and they're good for today only. That's 1-800-375-4188. Before the break, we were talking about China, the tariffs, and, you know, is this really about tariffs, or is this about American domestic policy? Is it a contest for global leadership? And during the break, you and I were talking about, China really doesn't want a trade war with the U.S. It's hard to think that they will sit idly by, and maybe they will take action with U.S. companies inside China that are doing business there. They might play with them a little bit and so forth. Or, you know, hey, there's no reason, you know, it'd be terrible if they decided to nationalize them. And my question was, would that bring us to war? Would the United States fight for the multinational corporations?
And I say to that, I doubt it. Particularly a military, anything involving the military, whether, you know, it be submarine-based cruise missile launches, which would be pretty dramatic. And, I would think, an overblown reaction to that. I think, there'd be maybe a combination of other actions that that at least first or more subtle, but meant to clearly send certain messages. I mean, gee, particularly now that the Constitution's been amended, and he, you know, in addition to being president, which is titular in nature, but he's also the chair, the head of the Communist Party. He's also the head of the commission that directs the military. His power is consolidated. So it depends how he wants.
Dangerous
to,
man.
He could be. It depends how he chooses to use it. You know, does he's got certainly his party to consider how they're going, because essentially he serves at their pleasure. There's the Chinese people, and you know, you got to believe that as closed, relatively closed society compared to Western democracy as China is, that you know they certainly know more about their country and leaders than say North Korea does, but it's certainly not nearly as much as any of the democratic nations. So he's got, I think, an image, an internal image, and also an external image, how he wants to be viewed by his so-called peers across the globe. So, you know, to answer your question, there's the more subtle actions could be turning the screws with big multinational companies that are doing and trying to do business in China. There's the very ambitious and very, what do you call it? The Belt and Road Program, I beg your pardon, that, you know, is trying to tie together China and Western Europe and even India with major infrastructure projects. You could jerk them around. He could also play games by, you know, making it more difficult for the U.S. to engage with North Korea. That could so indirectly, maybe, you know, that could certainly lead to a face-to-face combat.
What I find interesting is the timing. I don't know if he just felt he got to a certain point to where this would be the time to make these changes, or, you know, what is his plan? He has a plan.
No one
knows what that plan is. We can only speculate.
Give us a call at 1-800-375. Well, you know, he's on the verge of his second term. I mean, it was probably smart to get this constitutional amendment approved now, so you know would be candidates for when he would have so-called left the presidency in 2023 are sort of forewarned. Hands off, buddy.
Although, you know, that could be maybe because he's expecting some sort of a banking crisis.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
And, you know, this is his way in which he'll be able to maneuver without much resistance. Because you have the U.S., you have China, you have Canada, you have Hong Kong, among the economies most at risk of some sort of a banking crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And this was put out by the Bank of International Settlements, and you know, but that is according to their warning indicators. You have household borrowing is seen as a risk factor for China and Hong Kong. They also did during this study that they did in order to get these indicators, Italy wasn't shown as being at risk. And yet, if you look at Italy's, which doesn't even really make much sense, because if you look at their struggles and their slow growing economy and the banks that are just mired in bad debts, I mean, you know, I can remember talking about Italy not too long ago where, you know, people could only withdraw, what, $60 a week out of their bank accounts and so forth. Yet Italy isn't shown at being at risk, although I think everyone is a little partial to Italy because you have the Vatican and everything else. So Italy is a different country.
But good food, fine wine, and an occasional orgy, depending who your prime minister is, right?
Yeah, jeez, right.
It's just out of control.
But while China was flagged a key warning indicator known as the credit to gross domestic product, GAP, as we'll call it, showed an improvement. This may or may not suggest the government is making progress in its push to reduce financial sector risk.
Yeah, that GAP, which is the difference between the credit to GDP ratio and its long-term trend. A blowout in that number can signal that credit growth is excessive and a financial bust may be on the horizon. In China, that gap fell to 16.7% in the third quarter of last year, and that's down from a peak of roughly 29% from March of 2016. And it's the lowest since 2012, that BIS study showed. Now, some observers believe the narrowing gap in China suggests the efficiency of financial intermediation is improving, which helps to slow the pace of the rise of the debt-to-GDP ratio, and that creates conditions for an eventual deleveraging of the economy.
You know, it seems like China is apparently getting serious about dangers in its financial system, while their de-risking has become the, or has been the government's mantra since 2015. The country's most powerful politicians have been ramping up directives on everything from shadow banking to stock market speculation. Since April of last year, China's financial regulators have targeted curbing the growth of wealth management products and interbank borrowings, and with a more recent focus on reining in household debt, which, like in the U.S., is at all-time highs. The CEFC, China's national emergent energy company, has been shrouded in mystery since its rapid rise. So is the turmoil that's surrounding it. So is the turmoil that's surrounding it. CEFC's chair, Xi Jinping. Well, I don't know why they just can't get Western names, you know.
we'll call him J-Yi.
J-Yi. Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
But it's said to have been investigated by Chinese authorities, and the company is reported to have taken over by an arm of the Shanghai government. Speculation that the company is connected to China's military, the People's Liberation Army, has followed the CEFC during its rise. So tell the listeners, what is CEFC, Dave?
Well, Melody, you know, when it's their national energy company, when it agreed to buy a $9 billion stake in Russia's Rosneft PJSC late last year, CEFC said it was China's largest private oil and gas company with 50,000 employees and revenue of more than $40 billion. Since its founding in 2002, it has bought up stakes in sectors ranging from oil and petrochemical processing to financial services, apparel, and even a soccer team in the Czech Republic. Its oil trading portfolio includes a 4% stake in Abu Dhabi's largest oil concession, awarded last year for nearly $900 million in a signing bonus, and a 5-year supply deal with Rosneft of Russia.
What suggests the CEFC may be tied to China's military, and why should we be concerned about this?
Well, there's the crux, some people think. The Singapore-listed ANAN, International Limited, said in its 2012 annual report, when it was still called CEFC International LTD, that Yi, that's J.E., worked from 2003 to 2005 as Deputy Secretary General of CAIFC, the acronym for the China Association for International Friendly Contact. That group, Melody, is known to be a political arm of the People's Liberation Army in China. Now, in a 2016 interview with Fortune magazine, Yi said he declined an invitation to become a director of that association, and he denied any ties to the military. Yet,
any official link to the government?
Well, it doesn't appear so, but you know, the company's made efforts to align itself with the ruling Communist Party, and along with it, their priorities. And again, once again, with Xi now in apparent total control, that I think is the most significant thing. That not only does Xi now control the military and presumably other parts of the Chinese government, he now can, I don't know that he has, but to me, the fact that he can manipulate their, you know, this immense country's energy, the distribution, possibly the generation. Whoa, that's an amazing amount of power, to control the power grids, particularly, you know, when you look at, you know, the Taiwan and Hong Kong factors and, you know, still the remote possibility of, you know, movements for independence. Those are my initial thoughts.
Well, you know, it kind of just shows, and in a world where, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, a fight for, you know, being number one. And it seems, I want to talk a little bit more about Belt and Road, the Belt and Road program. We don't have time today, so maybe we can just talk just briefly about it on Wednesday, because I think it's interesting when it comes to energy.
It is.
Because that's what it's all about. And again, I do believe the reason that we're seeing this happen with North Korea is because Russia wants to build that pipeline down to South Korea, and it has to go through North Korea. And I believe there's some degree of having Russia behind the program gives North Korea a little bit of strength and bargaining power when it comes to the table. So that's my belief, and I believe also we're out of time. I will be back tomorrow with Butch Paul, and Dave, you'll join me on Wednesday. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, good night, and God bless.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me